Hello and welcome to the 27th episode of the Pop Papa Napcast. My name is TJ Deitch, your host and the proprietor of poppapa.com. Hope everybody's been doing well. As you noticed, there was no episode last week. That's because we were on vacation for the first half of the week, and I did take my little mini recorder that I use for interviews and recorded about 15-20 minutes worth of talking, and it honestly turned out so bad that I figured it wasn't worth cutting together and trying to get enough stuff together and then trying to do another episode a few days later. So I skipped it, but that means I have a lot to talk about today. Like I was saying, we were on vacation in a town called Ipswich in Massachusetts. Basically what we did was we rented a house near the ocean with my wife's parents. And we've done this, I think, for the past 3 years. The first year we did it, Lucy was just born. She was a couple months old. And we stayed in the house that we stayed in this time. The second time, we went to a place in Gloucester, and then we came back this year. Unfortunately, I think it's going to be the last year that we go to this place. As awesome as the view is, and that's really why we went back to it, it's just not really big enough for all five of us anymore. Basically, there's two bedrooms, and since they're not very big and the beds were kind of tiny, Lucy and Em slept in the one room, her parents slept in the other, and I slept on the couch. So it's not optimal. It wasn't terrible. I mean, I've slept in worse places, but, you know, when you're going on vacation, it's not really the best thing. Plus, like, being out in the living room, everybody else kind of woke up before me, so I kind of woke up on their time. The other thing that wasn't great about the vacation, aside from the sleeping arrangements for me personally, was that I decided to make this kind of a working vacation. So on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, I got up and I did my morning post like I usually do, which, you know, that part wasn't such a big deal. But then a couple other things kind of came up and blew up and needed to be taken care of in a much quicker fashion than I anticipated. And so there was a lot more stress involved with this vacation, all due to work stuff, than normally. So that was a bummer. I think basically the lesson I learned is that it might be best to kind of just take that time off. Because, I mean, the work itself was a bummer, you know, that's just the usual stuff. But also, it really took me away from the vacation at a couple points. Like, we were out at a playground, and Lucy was having a good time. My mother-in-law needed to run back to the house real quick. I had just gotten this email, and I checked my phone, and I was like, oh, I should go take care of this. So I drove us back, and then she went back to the playground with Lucy and Em's dad, and, you know, they all had fun and came back a little bit later. And I didn't go on, like, one visit to a relative because I wanted to take care of some stuff. So it was just kind of, like, not optimal and kind of bummed me out that I had to separate myself. Now, I could have even said, like, I don't have time to take care of this stuff. I'm on vacation. I can do my normal stuff. But this is a little bit too much of a quick turnaround. But things have been really slow lately. And I figured that I could kind of bang these two stories out and get them done. And, you know, at least add them to my paycheck for the week or for the month. So, you know, give and take, I guess. But I think in the future, I'm not going to work on vacation. Just because, you know, the whole point is to relax and spend time with family. And I couldn't do that quite as much. But that's the downside. The plus side was that Lucy loves the beach. She loves the water. We knew this from visiting my parents' cottage. And their lakefront property kind of slopes right down like a beach into the lake. But she loves the ocean just as much. The first day we got there, we drove in on a Saturday. That's when our kind of rental of the place started. So we got up early and made the 4-hour drive. No problems. Lucy watched her movies and we listened to a book and it was all good. I was pretty exhausted after we kind of unloaded everything. I hadn't slept well the night before. So I took a nap and they ran down to the beach and had fun and that was all good. And then we did a couple other activities. We went to a nearby orchard slash farm, and Lucy got to hang out with some animals. The website said it was a petting zoo, but it wasn't really. You could pet a few things, but it, you know, to me, a petting zoo is where you actually get in there and can pet an animal. And this was kind of like you could pet a goat's head if it stuck it through the the big fence or whatever. And there was a couple gnarly looking turkeys there that I don't like the look of. I don't like birds on my level because they have talons, and turkeys look like raptors with feathers, and that's creepy. But we got some apples, we got some apple cider, which she really dug, and some apple cider donuts, which we actually wound up going back and getting more of on our way home as a thank you to our friends who took care of the cat while we were gone and just for our general eating pleasure. We also went to a different beach one day called Crane's Beach. I went with him this time. And then on the last day, the Wednesday when we came back, it was like 90 degrees. It had been kind of cool, getting a little bit warmer and warmer. And then on our last day, it was 90 degrees. And there was some work stuff that was kind of getting on me. But kind of the nice thing about being on the East Coast when your company's on the West Coast and some of your bosses and stuff is that, like, it'll take them a little while to get up and start dealing with things. So that gives you a little bit of wiggle room. And so I use that wiggle room to go down to the beach with my wife and my daughter and my mother-in-law, because our Em's dad had to go back and work on Wednesday. And the water was still pretty cold, but tide had rolled out. And so there were all these kind of like little pools of water and sand. And so Lucy was running around and having a great time. And it was worth it to go down. And it was just so freaking hot anyway. And by the time I got back, I'd gotten the last couple of things that I needed. I was able to put my last story together, got it in, and it was all good. So, you know, it all worked out well. But like I said, I think next time I will not do the working vacation thing. But again, we'll see. I mean, I say that now, but it's all pretty situational at this point. So yeah, vacation went really well. The drive back was fine. Then we had, you know, Thursday and Friday. Thursday was interesting because we went to look at some of the houses that we've been driving around and seeing. I was kind of like, you know, we're coming back Wednesday. Can we look at some stuff? And it's been years since we've actually seen the realtor. I've talked to her and I've emailed back and forth with her. But it's really cool to get back in person with her, get back in touch more, because she's real no-nonsense. She knows kind of what our situation is. And she doesn't mind telling you, like, what she thinks of a place. Not in, like, a rude way, but just, you know, she's blunt, and I appreciate that, because you deal with a lot of BS in the world. And from what I've seen on realty shows on Bravo and whatnot, it's kind of all BS for a while. But so we got into three of them. The first one is actually in a part of Cornwall that's kind of off to the side. I didn't even know it existed, really, until the last couple months. And it's actually a lake, and it reminds me of the place where my parents have a lake, just because it's kind of that setup. But when we went to it, the upstairs was really nice, actually. The rooms were surprisingly big. It was well set up. The kitchen was fairly new. But the problem was that the basement was completely, I don't know about moldy, but it was definitely musty. And so, you know, as soon as our realtor walked down, she kind of, you know, we weren't even all the way down the stairs yet. And she was like, you know what? No, don't even worry about it. This one's too musty. We kind of heard a friend of my wife's from work had gone through this house. They're looking for a place too. And kind of said the same thing. And I had forgotten to tell our realtor that we weren't really interested in that one anymore. But, you know, it was good to still get in there and kind of see what that area kind of has to offer. And so we left that one. Plus, the other problem with that one is that it's kind of on like a main road for that area. It's not like a highway or anything, far from it, but it's not necessarily like a calm, lazy side road either. So, you know, those are some things. We kind of crossed that one off the list right away because we don't have the money to buy a place and get in there and like refurb the basement or whatever would need to be done. The second place we looked at was interesting. It's kind of a split level ranch that used to have a two-car garage, and they actually took one of the garages away and made a room down there. So there's a room downstairs. It's kind of like a bedroom, but you can walk right into it. And then there's like a sitting area downstairs. And then you go up the stairs, and there's another sitting area with kind of a cool like pellet stove kitchen that was old, oldish, I guess. And then a couple rooms that weren't very big. The problem with that one was that there was very little to no closet space. And that's one of the things that we're kind of dealing with a lot of these houses, because Cornwall is an old town. And that means that a lot of the places aren't super new and therefore aren't really up to what you expect from a modern house. Smaller kitchens, potentially not great electrical, just because you've got to update considering how many devices and appliances we use these days. All that kind of stuff is kind of what you got to look into. Plus, we like the idea of an open floor plan, and that just wasn't a cool or good thing, popular thing to do back when people were building houses in like the earlier part of the last century. So there's going to be some give and take, and one of the things that my wife and I always comment on when we're watching the realty shows on like HGTV, because the more into the reality of buying a house that we get, the more we watch of that channel and watch like what people do with their spaces when they get them and how they choose what they want. But what we've realized and what we always tell each other when we're watching those shows is that the people on there just sound like idiots. And I'm sure they're encouraged to be, but, you know, we watched one episode last night and this guy whined about every little detail of every single place. And I was like, look, you're not going to find the perfect house. You're going to find a house that you can either move into and live in for a while and then update, or you can have enough money to update right away. But you're probably going to have to finagle a house to get it to be closer to your ideal. And that's what we were looking at with the third house, which was kind of a big old house, really cool wood floors. But the problem with that one was that it looked like they added on in the front. You walk in the door and it's like a small hallway. To your left is a room. You go through another doorway and there's another room to your left, and then a big open space, and then kind of around the right to the corner is another room that as soon as I walked in that, I was like, oh my gosh, this would be the perfect office. And I really like fell in love with that room and the wood floors and kind of all that stuff. And then you walk out back into the bigger room. It's kind of awkwardly positioned. The kitchen is around back and the bathroom is past the kitchen. And then there's another like separate room all the way in the very back. So it's kind of weirdly set up. And then you go upstairs and there's three bedrooms, I think. One just small room. Like, I don't even know what you would do with it. It actually reminded me of the room that I rented when I first moved out to New York. It was so small, you could stand in the middle of the room, reach both your arms straight out, and touch both walls. There was just enough space for like a single bed, some plastic cabinets that I put at the foot of the bed for my clothes, and then a desk that my computer was on. And that was pretty much it. I had a small closet out in the hallway, but I mean, it was a really small area. And then there's this whole room that's probably like two or three times the size of that one that's completely tiled like it was going to be a bathroom, but they didn't put anything inside. And then you walk down the hall a little bit more and there's another bathroom. So I don't know, like I fell in love with the office rooms, but it would probably take a lot of rehab and demolition and fixing up and all that kind of stuff to make that house work. Still, I mean, if we had unlimited amounts of money, I think that would still be pretty high on the list. But Em didn't really get a good feeling from it. I liked it, but I think, and I mentioned this to her on the way home, is like once I saw that front room that I immediately pictured as my office, like everything else kind of just like went by with blinders because I was in love with that room. But, you know, it's a process. We've got plenty of time. We're still looking. And our realtor just kept telling us, you know, you've got time. You're not in a hurry. You're not in a rush. There's plenty out there and just don't, you know, buy too early, which is not something that we would do anyway. I mean, it's such a huge purchase. I don't even buy jeans if I don't like them all the way. So that's not really a worry. But it was good to get out there, see what's going on. Something my wife mentioned that, you know, I agree with, but she really put well into words, is that when we were looking the first time, we didn't have quite as much money at our disposal and the prospects didn't seem great. We saw some houses that were cool, but they were way too expensive. We saw a lot of dumps that were basically teardowns. And I mean, we don't have the money to rebuild. And I honestly probably don't have the patience at this point to deal with a project like that. But it was good to see these houses. The second and third one definitely had potential. And there's some interesting stuff going on there. So we're at least in an area where we can get something that's not a total dump for our money. Meanwhile, being back at the house, I am feeling closed in on again. I mean, Lucy's stuff is all over the place. It seems like every time we pick up, it just gets destroyed again. She's like a whirlwind. I mean, she's a little kid who's stuck in a house with me all day. It's gotten cold again and like rainy a lot. So we're inside. I got to tell you though, this weekend, she was a bit of a pill to deal with, especially Sunday. It was like, for whatever reason, her volume level like about doubled, if not tripled. Everything she said was a shout or a yell or a screech. And she was just going like a mile a minute all over the place. We went outside and we played a little bit and then she came back in and kind of figured she'd be a little bit more tired out. But I mean, just constantly like in our space, either mine or my wife's. My wife was trying to make a dress for her with her sewing machine and all that, which, you know, of course is super interesting to Lucy. So she's all over that, looking at everything, touching all the buttons. And, you know, when she wasn't there, she was either messing with me or like being loud and running around. And I mean, I understand this is all kid stuff, but it was just like so much going on in one weekend. And it was like, oh goodness, child, you're driving me crazy. But you know, that's just kind of how life goes, I guess. Part of her rambunctiousness shows itself by pretending, which is actually really cool to see. You know, I don't really know a lot about child psychology. I studied a little bit of it in college, but not too much. But, you know, I think it's interesting that at a certain point, kids figure out how to pretend. And they don't always do it. You've got to learn how to pretend, I think. And maybe watching something like Elmo or some of the other shows that she watches helps. But it's like, you know, it's like a form of acting, and she's exploring her brain and stuff. And it's been cool because what she'll do is she'll just act like a cat or a dog. So she'll just meow and bark and get down on all fours. She was actually fetching one time. It's so cute. And actually, last week when we went to the grocery store after we got back from vacation, for like the last half of it, she acted like a cat and just meowed at me, which sounds maybe a little annoying. But for one, it's cute. And two, it kept her in the cart. And sometimes she wants to run around like she did when we went to Target the other day, which was a nightmare. There's just something about Target that sets her off. She never wants to sit in the cart. She always wants to run around and just, like, avoid us and go up and down all the aisles. But she's not that bad at the grocery store anymore. Partially, like I said, because she's doing the cat thing. So that's actually pretty fun. I'm really fascinated by, like, how a kid learns how to do this stuff. I'm sure there's something I can look up. I just have not done it yet. But that's cool. It's also interesting because she's starting to speak in metaphor a little bit. Her speech is pretty good. Sometimes you have to wait. She kind of fills in space with like babada babada babada, and then we'll get to her point. So you've got to kind of like drop that out when you're translating. But like when she, if you've got your legs up or an arm in her way, she'll say open the door, and so you move your stuff, and then so she can climb up and sit down next to you on the couch or whatever. And it struck me fairly recently that it's interesting. She doesn't say move your leg, she says open the door, which is a metaphor, you know. And I don't know if maybe to her a door is any barrier between her and what she wants or what. But then once you do sit her down, she'll sometimes pull your leg or your arm towards her and go, seatbelt, which is definitely a metaphor. So it's just kind of interesting to see like what's developing, what's going literal and what's going metaphorical. You know, again, I don't know what stage any of this stuff means, but it's just cool to kind of see that development and be there while she figures out how to say things in creative and fun ways. To get into a little bit of TV talk, after much trying, Em finally got Lucy to sit down and watch Tangled, so that's been on very heavy rotation for the past couple of weeks. Tangled is the CGI Disney movie that tells the story of Rapunzel. I still probably haven't sat down and watched the entire thing from beginning to end, but it's been on a lot, and I've probably caught most of the parts. There's a few funny things that I've noticed. I thought she picked up the word bad guy from me, just from talking to her about different stuff and like telling her stories. But apparently there's a line in Rapunzel, I just caught this today, where, you know, somebody said, you're the bad guy. And I was like, oh, that's where she gets it. And we realized after we showed it to her that this story is actually pretty confusing for a little baby, because basically Rapunzel's like some magic kid, and she got kidnapped by, I don't know, like a witch or something from her royal family parents. And she's got this hair that can grow and heal people. And so the witch keeps brushing her hair, and when Rapunzel sings, it makes people young and heal, or I don't know. It's kind of confusing. But the witch told Rapunzel, since she was a baby, that she's her mother. So that's what Rapunzel thinks, and that's how she's presented for, you know, whatever part of the movie. And we realize that it's like, oh, Lucy's not going to understand the intricacies of the plot. So we kind of started referring to her as, like, bad mommy and good mommy, or, like, fake mommy and real mommy. And it's still not the best way to explain it, but it's funny to watch her watch that movie, because once Rapunzel cuts her hair off, it turns brown. Well, spoiler, I guess. She cuts all of her hair off, or somebody does. Again, I don't know. It can't be that much of a spoiler if I don't know what happens. But all of her hair is short and brown. Both my wife and I have short brown hair. And, like, every time this scene happens where it goes from blonde to brown, Lucy always goes, ew, yucky. So I don't know what that says about us, but she must think blonde hair is prettier than brown hair. She's got kind of blondish hair, so I guess she's all right in that case. Then today, she started watching a little bit of Sid the Science Kid, which I was not able to change in time, and I was kind of stuck with. But I don't work in the living room as much. I work kind of a little bit further away at the kitchen table, so I don't have to listen. The voices on that show drive me insane, and I feel like the characters are so, like, not stereotypical, but just, like, one note and dumb and boring. and I don't like it. But she got a kick out of it, so she watched a couple episodes. I'm hoping it's not on Netflix. I think it is, but I think I can avoid it pretty well. She's also been on this thing lately, aside from a couple times of Tangled, where she just wants to watch, like, 15 minutes of things and then go on to the next thing, which is very frustrating. That kind of elaborated itself today, where she wanted to watch something in the main room, in the living room, and then she wanted to watch something in the bedroom. And there were different things, and she kept going back and forth. And meanwhile, I was trying to set up the menu. It's finally fall. I can kind of get into some heartier foods. I'm really excited about that. I had a big stack of things that I wanted to base my meals off of this week, and I had to keep moving them from room to room to room because she wanted to be in the living room, and then she wanted to go in the bedroom, and then she wanted to hang out in her own bedroom, and then it was back to our bedroom and back in here. So maybe I burned a few calories by carrying all those books, but other than that, it was kind of a pain. But I got my menu figured out. She went down for a nap. The whole nap thing has still been kind of all over the place. Today she was tired and went into her room and actually fell asleep. Over the weekend, my wife would say, "Do you want to go lay down with mommy?" And then they would go lay down in our bed and fall asleep. And it seems to be around noon. Today it was a little bit later, at like 1, 1:30, I think. But, you know, we're starting to get into a little bit more of a pattern, I think. It seems like anywhere between like 11:30 and 2 is where she's going to fall asleep. So that's good to know. I mean, that means that depending on the day, depending when she falls asleep, you know, I could set up interviews for like the 2 or 3 o'clock area and probably be okay. I mean, I still know a couple tricks if I need to keep her up later or get her to go down a little bit sooner. So that's good to know. I mean, it's tough doing interviews with her awake, and I haven't tried to do one in a while, but she's still, at any time the phone rings, she wants to get all over it and talk to her grandma, grandpa, but it's not them. So yeah, I guess we're getting at a point where she's got a lot more energy. And I got to start thinking of good ways to burn it off. She's still not used to the fall weather, so she doesn't really want to wear clothes that much. She wore a dress for a little bit today and then took it off and has been running around in a diaper. I mean, I guess I'm no better. I'm just wearing shorts today. So, but, you know, I keep checking. I think she runs hot like me, but I keep checking every whatever, however often, asking her if she wants a zip sweatshirt or anything like that. And she'll say yes or no. One more quick TV time related thing that I wanted to mention was I saw an article today that I will link to in the show notes over on poppapa.com that there is a new season of Sesame Street kicking off. And like, as I was reading that headline, I looked at the TV and I realized that I was seeing what looked like the first episode from the new season. I didn't pay attention to the whole thing and I kind of thought about it later, but it seems to me like Sesame Street really like pieces itself together from a lot of existing parts and then throws in a few new elements. But this new episode really seemed to have a lot of stuff. There was a new opening story with, like, Elmo and I think Telly and a bird. And there's a whole thing where Cookie Monster was acting like James Bond. And there was a whole part, a new flying fairy school and a new Elmo's big musical and all this stuff. So it's cool to kind of see a lot more going on in these episodes. First, because it's nice for me to not have to see the same thing. I mean, I can turn Sesame Street on now and be like, oh, we watched that one. Part of that's because she watched it every day for a while. Now it's a little bit on and off. But we watched it every day in the morning, and then we also went through the entire thing on Netflix, which is like 80-some episodes. So it's a lot of the same stuff that's on Netflix and that's on in the reruns, and you just kind of go through the same things. Even something that's fairly new, like the Boardwalk Empire parody of Boardwalk Empire, I've probably seen half dozen times at this point. So it's a relief to hear that they're getting into some new stuff. Plus that means new celebrities talking to Elmo or Abby about letters and all that kind of stuff. So that's fun. That's just fun to see some newness. Plus, as good as the existing elements seem to work with helping Lucy learn about different things, counting, numbers, shapes, all that kind of stuff, it's nice to have him come at it from like a different angle. I can't imagine coming up with like 60 years worth of ways to teach kids about the letter C or the number 5 or anything like that. But, you know, that's what Sesame Street does, and they do it well. So it's good to see that, and I appreciate that quite a bit. I'm going to move into the Papa Seal of Approval. Today I'm giving it to a book called The Little Endless Storybook. Now, this is a little convoluted, but I don't think it has to be. The Endless is a group in a comic book called Sandman that DC's Vertigo imprint put out in the late 80s and early 90s. It's one of the greatest comic book series of all time. It not only got into some superhero stuff and tied itself into the actual DC universe, but it also just told these amazing stories, like modern-day fables and horror stories and fantasy and all of these things that really wrapped together into an amazing series. Neil Gaiman wrote the whole thing. A lot of different artists came on and did art for it throughout the, I believe, 80-issue run. And it's just a really amazing series. The kind of bedrock of that series revolves around seven beings known as the Endless. And they're all basically like the personification of an element of the real world, but not like fire and water and that kind of thing. Let's see if I can remember all seven. You've got Destiny, Death, Dream, Destruction, Desire, Delirium, and Despair. You can kind of get the idea, you know, Destiny is how everything plays out. The actual guy is a hooded figure with a book, and it's the Book of Destiny, and it has every single thing in it. Death is a lady. She is actually super nice, and she just happens to be the personification of death. Dream is kind of a removed individual who overlooks the entire dreaming, which is where all of your dreams happen. The coolest element of the dreaming, as far as I'm concerned, is the library. And the library not only has every book ever actually written, but every book that an author even thought about writing. So there's like works of Shakespeare and Dostoevsky and all these guys that are there that, you know, didn't actually get written, either because the author didn't finish them or something happened or they died or whatever. But I just always thought that was such a cool idea that, you know, those could exist there. And then the rest are pretty self-explanatory. So The Little Endless Storybook was put out by DC a few years back, and it's written and drawn by Jill Thompson, who has done other work with the Sandman characters and also has her own creation called Scary Godmother, which I haven't read, but I've always wanted to, and I've always heard really good things. She's done a few other things. She's done a thing called Beasts of Burden at Dark Horse, which follows a group of, I believe, mystery-solving dogs. That sounds silly, but from what I've heard, it's like really powerful. And I've read a couple issues, and they're really good. But this story takes the Endless characters and kind of cartoonizes them. Cartoonifies them, I guess, would make sense. And it focuses on Delirium. And she's a real, like, kind of scatterbrain girl. And the first book, there's two books, there's also Delirium's Party, but The Little Endless Storybook features Delirium and her dog Barnabas. Now, Barnabas says, "Hey, I gotta go take a leak, I'll be right back." Not in so many words. Not in such colorful terms, I should say. Or vulgar, however you're kind of thinking on that falls. But he goes to the bathroom. Delirium's such a space case. She goes, "Hey, where'd my dog go?" And she disappears. Barnabas comes back and says, "I've got to find my sister, or my master." He can't find her, so what he does is he goes and visits each of Delirium's siblings in their different worlds. It's just such a neat, like, fantasy-type book. I don't think you need to know anything about Sandman to enjoy it. And the kids definitely don't. Lucy doesn't even call her Delirium. She just calls her Girl. I mean, if you're worried about some of the content, I mean, obviously Despair, Desire, and Death might be three things that you're a little sketchy about, which is totally fine. They don't even refer to Death as Death in this book. They do in the second book, but she's just a nice lady with an ankh, and there's vague references to it, but I mean, it's pretty veiled and a kid wouldn't understand it. Despair is kind of a, she looks like a sumo wrestler with no clothes on, but you can't see anything. Again, you know, to each their own with what's acceptable and what's not. She looks just more like a cartoon character, kind of a lumpy cartoon character to me. But and then Desire is handled really well. In the comics, it's a whole different story. But it's just a really neat book. I love that there is a primer for children to kind of plant the seed of who these characters are so that when they're older, maybe when they're teenagers or whatever, they could read Sandman and get into it. I've had these books forever, and I kind of pulled one out recently, and Lucy was interested, and so we read it. My buddy Ricky gave them to me a while ago. I think maybe even before Lucy was born or around the time. And it was just so cool because it's a book that I love. I mean, Sandman is one of my top three comic book series of all time. It's that good. It's that powerful. I don't even just have the regular trades for it. I have these like gigantic hardcovers that are like in slipcases and big and fancy and almost impossible to read, but they're just so perfect for that book that I couldn't pass them up. And it's like giving your kid that cartoon Batman Brave and the Bold, which is a more kid-friendly version of Batman, or like the 80s Spider-Man or the 60s Spider-Man, where your kid can watch it and be like, oh, okay, cool, Batman, this is cool, Spider-Man, I get it. And then once they're a little bit older, you can show them some other stuff. And then when they're a little bit older than that, you can show them like the legit stuff, like, you like Batman? Check out Batman Year One, or let's go watch Dark Knight or Dark Knight Rises. Whatever it is, it's neat to have those different levels. Now, there's not that many levels with Sandman. I know there's a couple spin-off series that I have not read, but the Sandman-specific book is pretty heavy. I didn't read it until I was in my 20s, but you know, I knew guys in high school who did read it. It's funny because at that time I was like, oh, geez, they were like the goth kids or whatever. Or the trench coat kids, and you're like, oh, dude, I get it. You're edgy and different. You don't want to read Superman. I love Superman. You want to read Sandman. Oh, that's so cool. But it's actually like a amazing book. Neil Gaiman's written other stuff. His comic book work doesn't really match up to Sandman as much, but his novels are amazing. Good Omens is like a anti-Christ comedy, I guess is the best way to put it. That was the first thing of his I ever read long before Sandman, and I loved it. His book American Gods is one of the best things I've ever read. So that's kind of where these books are coming from. Jill Thompson is an amazing artist and writer. One funny thing that I noticed when I was showing Lucy the second book was that in the very back, after the story's all done, this is in Delirium's party, they show her process. And what she does is she draws out in pencil what she wants to do. Basically, one page has text and one page has art. And some of the art will flow over into the text page, but that's pretty much how it's set up. And there was this spread of how she does it, and it was pencils, and then you flip it over, and it's the painting. There might have been a third step. I can't quite remember, and I don't have the book in front of me. But Lucy, like, really did not like the unpainted thing, and I think she understood that it wasn't complete, and she thought something was missing or had gone away. And so she did not want to look at that page. And actually, now that I think about it, she hasn't really wanted to read Delirium's Party at all. She just wants to keep reading the first book, which is interesting now that I think about it. But, you know, just for being an amazing book, for being kind of a stepping stone, for being beautifully painted, and just being awesome, I give The Little Endless Storybook from Vertigo and DC Comics, written and painted by Jill Thompson, the Pop Pop a seal of approval. You know, it's funny how the Pop Pop of the Week has become one of the harder things for me to nail down. There's a big lack of fathers in the things that I read. It's an interesting time. I think, you know what? I don't think I've given this to him yet, but there's an author that I really love. And the more I think about it, the better this sounds. His name's Brad Meltzer. He's written books like The Millionaires. That was the first novel of his I ever read. The Book of Fate, The Book of Lies, The Zero Game, Fifth Assassin, I think is his latest one. He's got a show on TV called Decoded, where he has a team of investigators kind of go out and figure out, like, different mysteries from history. And he has written comic books. He wrote Identity Crisis. He wrote an arc of Green Arrow called Archer's Quest, which is awesome. And he wrote some Justice League for a while, which I just reviewed over on United Monkey 2 weeks ago. So you can check out the link on Pop Papa for that. And he's also a dad. He's written two books, Heroes for My Daughter and Heroes for My Son. I haven't read those, but I really want to. Those basically profile real life people that his kids can look up to, which I think is awesome. His book is one that I have experienced twice. I read it a few years ago because I had heard that it somehow incorporated the Cain and Abel murder with the creation of Superman, which in and of itself was enough to be like, okay, I'm going to check that out. That was several years ago. And then recently, before not the trip to the beach, but the trip before that, up to New Hampshire, I was looking around on our library's like digital audiobook rental thing, and they had The Book of Lies. And I thought, oh, awesome. It's been long enough. I only remember a few details. Some of them are kind of spoilery, but for the most part, I remember the whole thing. Let's do this. And so over these two trips, we listened to it. And everything in this book is basically about fathers and sons. I'm going to spoil some stuff, including something that happens at the very end. I will warn you before that, but, you know, I think you should just go read this book or listen to it. It's great. The book really revolves around father and son relationships. There's like a crazy killer guy whose dad realized that his wife's family was nuts and obsessed with this cause. And so he basically took his kid and hid in the middle of the night and ran away in an effort to separate his son from that craziness. But he eventually found out and is also crazy. And so he's kind of like the soldier for that bad group now. There's the main character, Cal, and his dad. His dad accidentally killed his mom, who had mental illnesses and was trying to like attack him one night, and she died, and he went to prison for it and never really reunited with his son. They get reunited and kind of go on this journey together, but they never really trust each other. There's, you know, the Cain and Abel and Adam relationship, which isn't as directly important to the story. And then there's the relationship between Jerry Siegel, who's one of the creators of Superman, and his dad. And what Meltzer really gets into in this book is that one of the main reasons that we even have Superman as a society right now is because Jerry Siegel's dad got shot and died. And the main thing of Superman is that he's bulletproof. He created a hero who could not be shot, who could not be taken out by thugs, who could do good no matter what was up against him and would succeed. And there's all these other things going on in the book, and I think it's really intricately done and both a thrilling piece of fiction with lots of historical fact in it and the kind of story that you can kind of look at, I think, at different points in your life and take different things from. I wasn't a dad when I read it the first time, and I found myself kind of understanding bits and pieces of it better. The assassin guy, I get his dad completely. You want to protect your child, but I guess you can't outrun everything, you know? His dad didn't actually do enough to get him away from the mother's family. The dad who accidentally killed the mom went to prison, and without really directly stating it, one of the reasons he never went back to his kid was because prison really messed him up. He kind of turned into a little bit of an animal. And while I don't know if this was a conscious decision on his part, I think he stayed away partially because he got kind of turned into a monster and wouldn't be any good for his son. But the thing that really, it actually almost made me tear up a little bit while we were driving. And this is a big spoiler. Big spoiler warning. The whole thing is like, what is the Book of Lies? It's something that goes back to Cain and Abel or whatever. It's supposed to be this big secret, but is it the lie or is it the Book of Truth? This whole thing back and forth. And basically, the hero winds up finding out what it is, and it's much more mundane than, you know, the assassin and his group thought it was. And it's not magical. It's not any of this stuff. It's a simple message, and it's a picture of two parents holding a child and the father talking to the son. The message is the only way to achieve immortality is to tell your story. And I just really like that message. I mean, obviously, as someone who wants to be a writer, that hit me. As a parent, that hit me, because there is no immortality at this point. Until we get to the singularity, you know, we're pretty far away from that. But the way that you can pass yourself on is to teach your children well, help them grow up to be good people, and maybe they can tell your stories. You can also write your stories down and share them with everybody. And that is another way that you can kind of live on. But it's not just about living on. It's about, I think, having a positive effect on the world instead of a negative effect, which is something else that I want to hopefully instill in, you know, our child, our daughter. And, you know, I don't know. I hope I'm doing that. It's one of those things I kind of think about a lot. And, I mean, I think she's turning out pretty well, so hopefully it's not a problem. But it's just something I think about a lot, and it was neat. It was just good timing, you know, coming home from a vacation with family, spending so much time with my wife and my daughter and her parents, just to kind of get that idea. I mean, that's kind of one of the reasons I think I do this podcast. It's not quite what I originally imagined it would be. It's a lot more of me just talking about kind of random things and updating on my life and my week and all that kind of stuff, and Lucy's what's going on with Lucy, but it's kind of a record of what's going on. It's my voice on a recording that other people can hear and that Lucy can hear when she's older, and she'll understand it a little bit better. So, you know that, you know, I guess I'm telling my story by way of podcast, and that is just, you know, one of many ways to do it. So that was just kind of a cool thought. I really appreciate Brad Meltzer putting that on paper and it kind of getting into my brain at the right point this time, because I think I enjoyed the idea last time, but now I kind of got it doubly so as a potential writer and a parent. So that was cool. So, you know, for all that, Brad Meltzer and The Book of Lies gets the Pop Papa of the Week. All right, gang, that's going to wrap it up. This one's a little bit long and my computer looks like it's about to blow up, so I think I'm running low on memory. Thank you for listening. If you want more of me, head on over to poppapa.com. That's poppapa.com. My pop culture website is called United Monkey. That's monkee.com. You can check out reviews of books, movies, TV, audiobooks, CDs, music, all that kind of stuff over there. I also have Monkeying Around the Kitchen, all one word, no spaces, where I talk about food, what I'm cooking, what I'm making, what I'm eating, all that kind of stuff. And I'm on Twitter at Papadich. That's PoppaDietschSch. All right, gang, have a good week.